Jensen couldn't seem to get her breath as she frantically looked this way and that, trying to find the man who had stolen her money.
No,
she whined, too overcome to know what to say.
Oh, no, please, no.
She sank down, sitting on the ground beside the table.
I need a horse, dear spirits, I need a horse.
The man hurriedly poured wine in a cup and squatted down beside her as she sobbed. Here, drink this.
I have no money,
she managed to get out as she wept.
No charge, he said,
giving her a sympathetic, lopsided smile of straight, white teeth. It'll help. Drink it down. The other two blonde-headed brothers, Joe and Clayton, stood behind the table, hands in their pockets, heads lowered with regret for the woman their brother was tending to. The man tipped the cup up, trying to get her to drink as she cried. Some spilled down her chin, some went in her mouth, and she had to swallow it.
Why do you need a horse? The man asked.
I have to get to Althea's place.
Althea, the old sorceress?
Jensen nodded as she wiped wine from her chin and tears from her cheeks.
Have you been invited out there?
No,
Jensen admitted.
But I have to go.
Why?
It's a matter of life or death. I need Althea's help, or a man could die.
Crouching beside her, still holding the cup he'd used to give her a drink, his eyes turned from looking into hers to take in her ringlets of red hair under her hood. The big man put his hands on his knees and stood, going back to his brothers, to let her be as she tried but failed to halt her desperate tears. Jensen wept with worry for Betty, too. Betty was Jensen's friend and companion, and a connection to her mother. That poor goat probably felt abandoned and unloved. Jensen would give anything just then to see Betty's little upright tail wagging. She told herself that she couldn't just sit there acting like a child. It would accomplish nothing. She had to do something. There could be no help in the shadow of Lord Rawl's palace, and she had no money to help her. She couldn't depend on anyone except Sebastian, and he had no hope of help but from her. Now his life depended on her actions alone. She couldn't sit there feeling sorry for herself. If her mother had taught her anything, she had taught Jensen better than this. She had no idea what to do to rescue Betty, but she at least knew what she had to attempt in order to help Sebastian. That was what was most important, and what she had to do. She was wasting precious time. Jensen stood, angrily wiping the tears from her face, and then put a hand to her brow to shield her eyes from the sun. She had been in the palace a long time, so it was hard to judge, but she figured it to be late afternoon. Taking into account the sun's position in the sky at the time of year, she judged which way was west. If only she had Rusty, she could make better time. If only she had her money, she could rent or buy another horse. No sense yearning for what was gone and couldn't be recovered. She would have to walk.
Thank you for the wine,
Jensen said to the blonde-headed man, standing there fidgeting as he watched her.
Not at all,
he said as he cast his gaze downward. As she started away, he seemed to gather his courage. He stepped out into the dusty road and grabbed her by the arm.
Hold on there, ma'am. What are you thinking of doing?
A man's life depends on my getting out to Althea's place. I've no choice. I have to walk.
What man? What's going on that his life would hinge on you seeing Althea?
Jensen, looking up into the man's sky-blue eyes, gently pulled her arm away. Big and blonde, with his strong jaw and muscular build, he reminded her of the men who had murdered her mother.
I'm sorry, but I can't say.
Jensen held the hood of her cloak tight against a bitter gust of wind as she struck out again. Before she had taken a dozen steps, he took several long strides and gently grasped her under her upper arm again to drag her to a halt.
Look, he said in a quiet voice when she scowled at him. Do you even have any supplies?
Jensen's scowl withered, and she had to fight back the tears of frustration.
Everything is with our horses. The sausage lady, Irma, has everything, except my money. The cut purse has that.
So you have nothing?
It wasn't a question so much as scorn for so simple-minded a plan.
I have myself, and I know what I must do.
And do you intend to strike out for Althea's, in the winter, on foot, without any supplies?
I've lived in the woods my whole life. I can get by.
She pulled, but his big hand held her arm securely. Maybe so, but the Azereth Plains aren't the woods. There's nothing to help you make a shelter, not a stick of wood to make a fire. After the sun sets, it'll get as cold as the keeper's heart. You don't have any supplies or anything. What are you going to eat?
This time, she more forcefully jerked her arm away and succeeded in freeing it. I don't have any other choice. You may not understand that, but there are some things that you have to do, even if it means risking your own life, or else life means nothing and isn't worth living.
Before he could stop her again, Jansen ran into the river of people moving along the makeshift streets. She pushed her way through the crowds, past people selling food and drink she could not buy. It all served to remind her that she had not eaten since the sausage that morning. The knowledge that Sebastian might not live to have another meal gave urgency to her steps. She turned down the first road going west. With the southern winter sun on the left side of her face, she thought about the sunlight in the palace when she had been at the devotion, and how much it felt like her mother's embrace.
Chapter 19. Jensen wove her way among the people below the plateau, making her way down the haphazard streets, imagining she was stepping among trees, moving through the forests, where she felt most at home. That was where she wished she were, in a quiet forest, sheltered among the trees with her mother, the both of them watching Betty nibble on tender shoots. Some of the people pausing at stalls, or the merchants behind tables, or those strolling along, cast a gaze in Jensen's direction, but she kept her head bowed and continued along at a brisk pace. She was worried sick about Betty. The sausage lady, Irma, sold goat meat. That was no doubt why she wanted to buy Betty in the first place. The poor goat was probably heartsick and terrified at being taken away by a stranger. As sick as Jensen was over Betty, though, and as much as she ached to go find her and have her back, she couldn't put that desire ahead of Sebastian's life. Passing stands selling food only served to remind her of how hungry she was, especially after the effort of climbing all the stairs up to the palace. She hadn't eaten since that morning and wished she could buy something to eat now, but there was no hope of that. People cooked over open fires made with wood they no doubt had brought with them. Pans sizzled with butter, garlic, and spices. Smoke from roasting meats drifted past. The aromas were intoxicating and made her hunger nearly unbearable. When her mind wandered to her hunger, Jensen thought about Sebastian. Every moment she delayed could mean another lash of a whip for him, another cut, another twist to a limb, another broken bone, another moment of agony. The thought of it made bile rise in the back of her throat. No wonder he was here to help in the struggle to defeat Dahara. A thought even more terrifying abruptly jolted her. Mord Sith. Wherever Jensen had traveled with her mother throughout Dahara, no one feared anything or anyone more than they feared the Mord Sith. Their ability to inflict pain and suffering was legend. It was said that this side of the Keeper's Hand, a Mord Sith existed without peer. What if the Daharans used one of those women to torture Sebastian? Even though he had no magic, that wouldn't matter. With that, a Jeel of theirs, and who knew what else, the Mord Sith could hurt anyone. They simply had the added ability to capture a person with magic. A person without magic, like Sebastian, would be nothing but a brief blood sport to a Mord Sith. The crowds thinned as she reached the edge of the open-air market. The temporary lane she was on dwindled to nothing as it reached the last stall, occupied by a lanky man selling leather tack and piles of used wagon fittings. There was nothing beyond his heavily loaded wagon full of pieces and parts, but desolate, open land. An endless file of people moved along the road going south. She could see a haze of dust in the air marking the more distant sections of the road south, along with others branching off to the southwest and southeast. No road went west. A few people at the fringe of the marketplace glanced her way as she struck out alone toward the lowering sun. While some people might have looked her way, none followed into the wasteland that was the Azereth Plains.
Jensen was relieved to be alone. Being around people had proven as dangerous as she had always feared. The market scene was quickly left behind as she marched west. Jensen slid her hand in under her cloak, feeling the reassuring presence of her knife. Lying against her body, it was warm to the touch, as if it were a living thing rather than silver and steel. At least the thief had taken her money and not her knife. Given a choice of the two, she would rather have the knife. She had lived her whole life without much money, her and her mother providing for themselves. But a knife was vital to that means of survival. If you lived in a palace, you needed money. If you lived out of doors, you needed a knife. And she had never seen a better knife than this one, despite its provenience. Her fingers idly traced the ornate letter R on the silver handle. Some people needed a knife even if they lived in a palace, she guessed. She turned back to look and was relieved to see that no one followed her. The plateau had shrunk in the distance until all the people below it looked like slow little ants moving about. It was good to be away from the place, but she knew she would have to return after seeing Althea if she was to rescue Sebastian. As she walked backward for a spell to gain a reprieve from the icy wind in her face, her gaze rose along the road, switching back and forth up the steep cliffs to the massive stone walls surrounding the palace itself. Coming in from the south, she hadn't seen the road. At one place along its length, a bridge spanned a particularly treacherous gap in the rock. The bridge was pulled up. As if the cliff itself were not deterrent enough, the high stone walls around the people's palace would defeat any attempt to get inside unless you were allowed in. She hoped it would not be that hard to get in to see Althea. Somewhere in that vast complex, Sebastian was held prisoner. She wondered if he thought himself forever abandoned, as Betty probably did. She whispered a prayer to the good spirits asking that he not give up hope, and that the good spirits somehow let him know she was going to get him out. When she tired of walking backward and of seeing the people's palace, she turned around. Then she had to endure the wind buffeting her, sometimes ripping the breath right out of her mouth. Sharp gusts kicked the dry, gritty ground up into her eyes. The land was flat, dry, and featureless, mostly hardpan cut through here and there with a swath of coarse sandy soil. In places, the tawny landscape was stained a darker brown, as if strong tea had been stirred through. There was only occasional vegetation, and that was a low, scruffy plant, now winter brown and brittle. Gathered to the west lay a ragged line of mountains. The one in the center looked like it might have snow on top, but it was hard to tell against the sun. She had no guess at how far it was. Being unfamiliar with such land, she found it difficult to judge distances out on the plain. It could be hours or even days for all she knew. At least she didn't have to trudge through snow as they often had to do on their way up to the people's palace. Jensen realized that even in winter, she was going to need water. She guessed that in a swamp, there would be water aplenty. She realized, too, that the woman who had given her directions said that it was a long way, but hadn't described what was to her a long way. Maybe to her a long way was what Jensen would consider only a brisk walk of a few hours. Maybe the woman had meant days. Jensen whispered a prayer under her breath that it wouldn't be days, even though she didn't at all relish the idea of going into a swamp. When a sound rose to rattle through the wind, she turned and saw a plume of dust rising in the distance behind her. She squinted, finally recognizing that it was a wagon coming her way. Jensen turned all the way around, scanning the barren country, trying to see if there was any place she could hide. She didn't like the idea of being caught out in the open all alone. It occurred to her that men from back in the open-air market might have watched her leave, and then planned to wait until she was all alone with no one around to come out and attack her. She started running. Since the wagon was coming from the palace, she ran the direction she had been walking, west, toward the dark slash of mountains. As she ran, she sucked frigid gasps of air, so cold it hurt her throat. The plain stretched out before her, without so much as a crack to hide in. She focused on the dark line of mountains, running for them with all her effort. but even as she ran, she knew they were too far. Before long, Jensen forced herself to stop. She was acting foolish. She couldn't outrun horses. She bent at her waist, hands on her thighs, catching her breath, watching the wagon come for her. If someone was coming out to attack her, then running, using up her strength, was about as senseless a thing as she could do. She turned back to face the sun and kept walking, but at a pace that wouldn't wear her out. If she was going to have to fight, she should at least not be winded. Maybe it was only someone going home, and they would turn in a different direction. She had only spotted them because of the noise of the wagon and the dust it raised. They probably didn't even see her walking. The chilling thought washed through her. Maybe a moored Sith had already tortured a confession out of Sebastian. Maybe one of those merciless women had already broken him. She feared to think what she would do if someone were methodically going about snapping her bones in two. Jensen could not honestly say what she would do under such excruciating torture. Maybe, under unendurable agony, he had given them Jensen's name. He knew all about her. He knew Darkin Rawl was her father. He knew Richard Rawl was her half-brother. He knew she wanted to go to the sorceress for help. Maybe they had promised him they would stop if Sebastian gave her up. Could she blame him for a betrayal under such conditions? Maybe the wagon racing toward her was full of big, grim Daharan soldiers come to capture her. Maybe the nightmare was only about to begin in earnest. Maybe this was the day she lived in fear of. As tears of fright stung her eyes, Jensen slipped her hand under her cloak and checked to be sure that her knife was free in its scabbard. She lifted it slightly, then pushed it back down, feeling its reassuring metallic click as it seated in its sheath. The minutes dragged as she walked, waiting for the wagon to catch her. She fought to keep her fear in check and tried to run through in her mind everything her mother had taught her about using a knife. Jensen was alone, but she was not helpless. She knew what to do. She told herself to remember that. If there were too many men, though, nothing would help her. She recalled only too vividly how the men at her house had grabbed her and how helpless she had been then. They had caught her by surprise, but of course it mattered not how, really. They had caught her. That was all that mattered. If not for Sebastian. When she turned again to check, the wagon was bearing down on her. She planted her feet, keeping her cloak lifted open slightly, so that she could reach in and snatch her knife, surprising her attacker. Surprise could be her valuable ally, too, and the only one she could hope to summon. She saw, then, a lopsided grin of straight teeth beaming at her. The big blonde man drew his wagon close, scattering gravel and raising dust. As he set the brake, the dust drifted away. It was the man from the market, the man beside Irma's place, the man who had given her the drink of wine. He was alone. Unsure of his intent, Jensen kept her tone curt and her knife hand at the ready. "What are you doing out here?" He still wore the grin.
"I came out to give you a ride."
"What about your brothers?"
"I left them back at the palace."
Jensen didn't trust him. He had no reason to come give her a ride. "Thank you, but I think you had better go back to your own business." She started walking. He hopped down off the wagon, landing with a thud. She turned to be ready, should he come at her.
"Look, I wouldn't feel right about it," he said.
"About what?"
"I could never forgive myself if I just stood by and let you go out here to your death, which is what it will be with no food, no water, no nothing. I thought about what you said, that there are some things that you have to do, or else life means nothing and isn't worth living. I couldn't live with myself if I knew you were out here going to your death."
His tenacity faltered, and his voice turned more pleading.
"Come on, climb up in the wagon and let me give you a ride."
"What about your brothers?" "Before I found out I'd lost my money, you wouldn't rent me a horse because you said you had to get back." He hooked a thumb behind his belt, resigned to having to explain himself.
"Well, we've been doing so well at selling wine today that we made a goodly sum. Joe and Clayton were wanting to stay at the palace anyway and have a little fun for a change.
It was that Irma, selling her spicy sausages right beside us, that did it. He shrugged. So, since she helped us do so well, it gives me a chance to come help you. Since she took your horses and supplies, I figured that giving you a ride is the least I can do. Kind of makes it even out a little. It's just a ride. It's not like I'm risking my life or something. Just a bit of help I'm offering someone who I know needs it.
Jensen surely could use help, but she feared to trust this stranger.
I'm Tom, he said, as if reading her thoughts. I'd be grateful if you would let me do this to help you.
What do you mean?
Like you said, some things you have to do to make life a little more meaningful.
The briefest of glances took in her ringlets of red hair beneath the cloak's hood before turning solemn.
That's the way it would make me feel, grateful to have done something like that.
She broke the gaze first.
I'm Jensen, but I don't... Come along, then. I have some wine.
I don't like wine. It only makes me thirsty. He shrugged.
I have plenty of water. I brought along some meat pies, too. They're still hot, I bet, if you hurry and have some now.
She studied his blue eyes, blue like her bastard father's. Even so, this man's eyes had a simple sincerity about them. His smile wasn't cocky, but modest. Don't you have a wife to get back to?
This time it was Tom who broke the gaze to look at the ground. No, ma'am, I'm not married. I travel around a lot. I don't imagine a woman would much take to that kind of life. Besides, it doesn't afford me much of a chance to come to know anyone well enough to be thinking about marriage. Someday, though, I dearly hope to find a woman who would want to share a life with me. A woman who makes me smile. A woman I can live up to.
Jensen was surprised to see that the very question made his face go red. It seemed to her as if his boldness in talking to her and offering her this ride might be more forward than was his customary conduct. As affable as he was, he appeared painfully shy. Something about a man that big and strong being intimidated by her, a lone woman in the middle of nowhere, by her question about matters of the heart, put her at ease. If I'm not harming you, your business at earning a living...
No, he put in. No, you're not. Not at all.
He gestured back toward the plateau.
We made a good profit today, and we can afford a short rest. My brothers don't mind at all. We travel all over and buy whatever goods we can find at a reasonable price, everything from wine to carpets to spring chickens, and then we haul it back here to sell. It would really be doing my brothers a favor, giving them a break.
Jensen nodded. I could use the ride, Tom. He turned serious.
I know. A man's life is at stake.
Tom scrambled up onto the wagon and held down a hand.
Careful, ma'am.
She took his big hand and put a boot in the iron rung. I'm Jensen.
So you said, ma'am.
He gently drew her up to the seat. As soon as she was seated, he pulled a blanket from behind and placed it in a pile in her lap, apparently not wanting to be so presumptuous as to spread it out over her. As she arranged it on her lap, she smiled her appreciation for the warm wool cover. Reaching behind again, he rooted around under a pile of well-worn packing blankets and came up with a small bundle. Tom grinned his lopsided smile as he presented her with the pie wrapped in a white cloth. He was as good as his word. It was still warm. He recovered a water skin, too, and set it on the seat between them.
If you prefer, you can ride in the back. I brought plenty of blankets to keep you warm, and they might be more comfortable to sit on than a wooden seat.
I'm fine up here for now, she said. She lifted the pie in gesture. When I get my supplies back and my money, I want to pay you back for everything. You keep a tally, and I'll pay you back for it all. He released the brake and flicked the reins.
If that's your wish, but I don't expect it.
I do, she said as the wagon lurched ahead. As soon as they were underway, he turned from her westerly course to a more northwest line. She instantly reverted to her suspicion. What are you doing? Where do you think you're going? He looked a little startled at her renewed mistrust.
You said you wanted to go to Althea's, didn't you?
Yes, but I was told to go west until I reached the tallest snow-capped mountain, and then on the other side to turn north and follow cliffs.
Oh, he said, realizing then what she was thinking and why. That's if you wanted to take an extra day.
Why would that woman tell me to go away that would take more time?
Probably because that's the way everyone goes to Althea's, and she didn't know you were in a hurry.
Why send people that way if it takes more time?
People go that way because they fear the swamp. That way puts you in closest to Althea's at the end, meaning you have to go through the least amount of the swamp. It was probably the only way she knew about.
Jensen had to grab the rail for support as the wagon bounced over a crease in the rocky ground. He was right. The wooden seat was hard sitting. And with a wagon made for hauling heavy loads, it bounced more when empty.
But shouldn't I fear the swamp, too? She finally asked.
I suppose.
Well, then, why should I go this other way? He looked over again, taking the briefest glance at her hair. It was a behavior she was used to. Most people couldn't help but to look.
You said a man's life was at stake, he said, his timidity gone. It takes a lot less time this way, cutting the corner off the route by going this side of that peak she told you about and not having to go up that twisting canyon beneath the cliffs. The problem is, you have to go in the swamp from the back, so you'll have more of the swamp to go through to get into Althea's.
And that doesn't take more time, going through more swamp?
Yes, but even with having to go through more swamp, I'm betting you still save a day each way. That's 2 days saved.
Jensen didn't like swamps. More to the point, she didn't like the kinds of things that lived in swamps. Is it much more dangerous?
You wouldn't strike out alone with no supplies if it wasn't pretty important, a matter of life and death. If you were willing to risk your life to do that, then I figured you'd be looking to save any time you can. If you'd rather, though, I can take you the long way with less distance through the swamp. Up to you. But if time is important, it's 2 days more by going that way.
No, you're right.
The meat pie on her lap was warm. It felt good to have her fingers around it. He was a thoughtful man for bringing it.
Thank you, Tom, for thinking to save time.
Who is it that's at the other end of life and death?
A friend, she said.
Must be a good friend.
I'd be dead now, if not for him.
He was silent as they rolled toward the dark band of mountains in the distance. She brooded about what might lie in the swamp. Worse, she worried about what would happen to Sebastian if she didn't get Althea's help soon enough.
How long? Jensen asked. How long till we get to the swamp?
Depends on how much snow is in the pass and on a few other things. I don't go this way often, so I can't say for sure. If we ride all night, though, I'm reasonably sure we can be to the back reaches of the swamp by morning.
How long to get to Althea's, then? Through the swamp, I mean.
He glanced over uneasily.
Sorry, Jensen, but I don't know for sure. I've never been in Althea's swamp before.
Any guess?
Just knowing the lay of the land, I don't think it should take more than a day to go in and come back, but I'm guessing. And that doesn't count how much time you'll be spending in there with Althea.
His uneasiness returned.
I'll get you into Althea's as quickly as I can.
Jensen had to talk to Althea about the Lord Rawl. Both her father and the present Lord Rawl, Richard, her half-brother. It would not be good if Tom were to discover who she was or her purpose. His helpfulness would evaporate at the least. She also thought that a reason for him to stay behind might be in order lest he get suspicious. She shook her head.
I think it would be best if you stayed with the wagon and horses. If you drive all night, then you'll need to get some rest to be ready as soon as I come out. It will save us time.
He nodded as he considered her words.
That makes sense. But I could still...
No, I appreciate the ride, the food and water, and the warm blanket, but I won't let you risk your life in there, too. It would be the most help if you waited with the wagon and were ready to drive back when I come out.
She watched the wind in his blonde hair as he thought it over.
All right, if those are your wishes. I'm glad you let me help you with my part of it. Where to after you see Althea?
Back to the palace, she said.
Then, with good fortune, I'll have you back at the palace day after tomorrow.
That was 3 days for Sebastian. She didn't know if he had 3 days, or 3 hours, or even 3 minutes. As long as there was a chance he was still alive, though, she had to go into the swamp. Despite Jensen's misgivings about the job ahead of her, the meat pie tasted wonderful. Hungry as she was, nearly anything would have tasted good. She pulled a big piece of meat out of the pie and, holding it between a finger and a thumb, fed it to Tom. After he chewed, he said, "The moon will be up not long after sundown, so by the time I reach the pass through the mountains, I should be able to see well enough to keep going. There's plenty of blankets in back. When night comes, you should probably crawl back there and, if you can, get some sleep for tomorrow. You'll be needing the rest. In the morning, I'll catch a nap while you go in to see Althea. When you come back, I'll drive all night and get you right back to the palace. I hope that way we can save enough time for you to help your friend." She swayed in the seat along with the big man she had only just met, who was doing all this for a stranger.
"Thank you, Tom. You're a good man."
He grinned. "My mama always said so." Just as she took another bite, he added, "I hope Lord Rawl thinks so, too. You'll tell him when you see him, won't you?"
She didn't know what he could possibly mean and feared to ask him. As her mind raced, she chewed, using her mouthful as an excuse to delay, saying anything might inadvertently get her into trouble. Sebastian's life was at stake. Jensen decided to smile and play along. She finally swallowed the mouthful. "Of course." By the slight but sublime smile that lent a curve to the line of his mouth as he tended the reins and watched out ahead, it had been the right answer. Chapter 20. Light suddenly hurt her eyes. Jensen held up a hand against the brightness and saw that Tom was pulling the blankets back off her. She stretched and yawned, but then, realizing fully why she was in the back of a wagon, where they were, and why they were there, her yawn cut short. She sat up. The wagon was stopped at the edge of a grassy meadow. Jensen put a hand on the side of the wagon, on the coarse plank worn smooth along the top edge, and blinked as she looked about. Behind them, craggy gray rock rose up, holding in its cracks and fissures low stalwart bushes, gnarled and hunkered low, as if against an enduring wind. Her gaze rose up the weathered rock to where it dissolved into mist. Tangled growth lay at the foot of the walls, beyond the edges of the meadow, and beside the narrow chasm that cut through the rock. Tom had somehow jockeyed the wagon between those steep cliffs. The two big draft horses, still standing in their harnesses, cropped at the shaggy grass. Ahead, beyond the meadow, the ground descended into the gloom among spreading trees, trailers of vine and hanging moss. Strange calls, clicks, and whistles came from under the verdant shroud. "In the middle of winter," was all she could think to say. Tom lifted the feed bags from the back of the wagon. "Might be a nice place to spend the winter, too." He gestured with a nod down the hill, under the tangle of growth, were it not for what people say comes out of there. If it weren't true, I'd bet there would be some fool who by now would have tried to give it a go here. But if they have, they were pulled in there by some nightmare creature and never made it back out.
"You mean you really think there are monsters or something in there?"
He rested his forearms on the wagon's sides as he leaned in right over her.
"Jensen, I don't hold with scaring ladies. When I was a boy, some of the other boys enjoyed waving a wriggling snake at the girls just to hear them scream. I never did. I'm not trying to frighten you. But I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I just allowed you to go bounding in there as if it were some lark and then you ended up never coming out. Maybe it's just talk. I don't know. I've never gone in there. I don't know anyone who has ever gone in there without being invited in, and that's from the other side. People say you can't go in the back and live to tell about it. If anyone would insist on attempting it, it would be you. I know you're here for an important reason.
so I don't expect you're going to sit around for days waiting for an invitation.
Jensen swallowed. Her tongue tasted sour. She nodded her thanks, not knowing what to say.
Tom swiped back his fall of blonde hair. I just wanted to tell you the truth of what I know.
He hoisted the feed bags on his way to the horses.
Whatever was in there. She had to go in. That was all there was to it. She didn't have any choice. If she wanted to get Sebastian away from his captors, she had to go in. If she ever wanted to be free of Lord Rawl, she had to go in.
She reached under her cloak and touched the hilt of her knife. She wasn't some town girl scared of her own shadow, unable to defend herself. She was Jensen Rawl.
Jensen pushed the blankets the rest of the way off her and climbed out of the wagon bed, using a rear wheel spoke for a step. Tom was coming back around carrying a water skin.
Drink? It's water. I kept it hooked over the hame so the horses would keep it from freezing.
The cold had dried her out and she drank eagerly. She saw Tom wipe sweat from his brow and realized only then how warm it really was. She supposed no proper self-respecting swamp full of monsters would allow itself to be frozen over.
Tom pulled back the folds of cloth of something he held in one hand.
Breakfast?
She smiled at seeing a meat pie.
You're a thoughtful man, besides being a good man.
He grinned as he handed her the pie, and then turned to undo the trace chains from the horses.
Don't forget you promised to tell Lord Rawl, he called back to her.
Rather than be pulled into any kind of conversation having to do with her hunter, she diverted him from the subject.
You'll be right here then, when I come back, I mean? You'll be waiting so we can get back?
He peered back as he lifted the breeching strap over the horse's rump.
You have my word, Jensen. I won't desert you here.
By his expression, he was swearing an oath. She smiled her appreciation. You should get some rest. You've driven all night.
I'll try.
She took another bite of the meat pie. It was cold, but good, and it was filling. As she chewed, she glanced at the wall of green beyond the meadow, at the darkness within, then appraised the iron gray sky.
Any idea what time of day it is?
Sun's been up an hour at most, he said as he checked the joints on the leather straps.
He gestured back the way they had come in.
Before we started down into this low place, we were up above this fog and mist. It was sunny up there.
As somber as it was below the dark overcast, such a notion amazed her. It looked like dawn had yet to arrive. It was hard to believe that the sun was shining not far off. But she had seen such heavy blankets of fog before, as she looked down from high places. After she was finished eating the meat pie and had brushed the crumbs from her palm, Jensen stood waiting until Tom turned from unbuckling the girth strap from around the deep, powerful chest of one of his horses. Both big, well-kept animals were gray with black manes and tails. They were horses as big as any she had ever seen. They seemed out of scale until she took in Tom working beside them. He made them seem not quite so imposing, especially as he gave them affectionate strokes. They appeared to welcome his familiar touch. Both horses looked back occasionally at Tom as he removed all their gear or rolled a dark eye toward Jensen. But both kept much closer watch on the shadows beyond the edge of the meadow. Their ears were at attention and fixed on the swamp.
I'd better get going. There's no time to waste. He offered a single nod.
Thank you, Tom. If I don't get another chance to say it, thank you for helping me. Not many people would have done as you did.
His shy grin appeared again to show his teeth.
Most anyone would have helped you. But I'm pleased to be the one who was able to.
She was sure he meant something that she didn't quite understand. Whatever it was, she had bigger worries.
Her eyes turned toward the echoing calls coming out of the swamp. There was no telling how big the trees were because the tops disappeared up into the mist. As large as they looked, the trunks would have to be enormous.
Vines descended out of the mist along with any number of other twisting, climbing plants and shrouding the limbs of the huge trees as if trying to wrestle them down into the darkness below. Jensen searched the rim and found a ridge descending from the edge of the meadow, like the spine of some huge beast beneath the ground. It ran down in under the spreading limbs. It wasn't a path exactly, but a place to start. She had lived in the woods her whole life and could find a trail others would never know existed. There was no trail into this place. Nothing, it appeared, ever went in. She would have to find her own way. Jensen turned back from the edge of the meadow and shared a long look with the big man's blue eyes. He offered her a small smile, respect for what she was doing.
May the good spirits be with you and watch over you.
And you, Tom. Get some sleep. When I get back, we'll need to ride hard back to the palace.
He bowed.
By your command.
She smiled at his surprising manner, and then turned to the gloom and headed down in. The swamp held heat, gathered under its skirts. The humidity was like a presence waiting to push intruders back. With every step it grew darker. The quiet was as thick as the damp air, and the few calls reverberating through the darkness beyond only accentuated the hush and the vast distance that lay below. Jensen followed the spine of the ridge as it twisted this way and that, going ever lower. Branches of trees off to each side drooped with the weight of mosses and vines draped over them. In some places, as she stepped along the exposed rock of the ridge, she had to squat down to duck under the limbs. In other places, she had to push vines aside to make progress. The stink of decay drifted up to her through the dead, still air. Turning, looking back, she saw a tunnel of light back up to the meadow. In the center of the circle of dull light at the end, she could see the silhouette of a big man, standing hands on hips, watching down at her. As dark as it was, he had no hope of seeing her. She could only see him because he stood against the light, but he stood watching anyway. Jensen couldn't decide what she thought about him. He was difficult to figure out. He seemed a kind-hearted man, but she trusted no one, except Sebastian. She trusted him. As her eyes adjusted to the dim light, she saw, looking back, that the way she had come in was the only way to enter, at least anywhere close that she could see. There were steep walls where the rock dropped downward. The meadow had been like a mere shelf in the mountainside's descent into the swamp. Below the meadow, the walls held a wealth of plants that used the rock for support as they climbed upward from the swamp below. The ridge she used for her descent was a mere fold of rock that provided a way for her to climb down. Without it, the walls were too steep. Taking a deep breath for a resolve, as she gazed about, Jensen started back down, following the ridge of rock as it twisted its way down, deeper and deeper in among the trees. In places, there were frightening drops to each side where she walked. In one place, there was only darkness to each side below, as if she were on a thread of stone spanning a rupture in the world. After peering down into the depths and imagining the keeper of the underworld below, awaiting the unwary, she trod more carefully. She soon came to realize that many of the trees she had seen up higher had only been the canopy of towering, ancient oaks rising up from ledges in the rock. She realized that she had mistaken some of their upper limbs for trunks. Jensen had never seen trees so big. Her fear was almost replaced by awe. She gaped at the layer upon layer of massive limbs as she climbed down past them. In the distance she saw nests, large clumps of twigs and stalks draped with downy moss and lichen, perched in the crotch of limbs. If the nests were occupied, she didn't see what sort of bird could have built such imposing havens, but she guessed they had to be raptors. As she stooped while clambering over rock to squeeze herself under a tightly woven net of limbs drooping down close over the spine of the ridge, the vista opened onto a vast land hidden under the thick, leafy layers of the upper canopy. It was like a whole new world hidden away, unvisited by anyone before. Shafts of muted light hardly dared penetrate down this far. Here and there vines hung down out of the dark growth above,
Birds drifted silently through the cavernous gloom. An animal she had never heard before called from the distance. A faraway answer returned from another direction. As primitive and foreboding as the place seemed, she also thought it was darkly beautiful. It put her in mind of being in a garden of the underworld, where plants basked in eternal gloom. The underworld might be the keeper's cold domain, but the creator's everlasting light nourished and warmed good souls. In a way, the swamp reminded her of so much about Dahara, dark, threatening, and dangerous, but at the same time achingly beautiful. In the same way her knife embodied the ugliness of the House of Rahl, yet it was undeniably exquisite. Trees clung to the rocky slope around her with claw-like roots, as if fearing to be dragged down to what might lurk in the lower reaches. Some of the ancient pines, long dead, lay partly fallen, caught by their brethren before they could topple to the ground. The nearby trees embraced them, as if trying to help them up. Dead gray wood was visible in places under the covering of growth climbing up the tilted trunks. Many, though, had collapsed to the ground. One old tree lay across her way, as if it had melted there, conforming to every contour, every rise and fall of the ridge. The disintegrating wood was spongy underfoot and teeming with insects. Up in the branches, an owl watched as she scrambled ever downward. Ants marched along the ground, carrying bits of treasures from the damp forest. Roaches, big, hard, and glossy brown, skittered across the leaf litter. Things off in the dense undergrowth disturbed branches as they moved away from her. Jensen had spent a lifetime in forests and had seen everything from huge bears to newborn fawns, birds to bugs, bats to newts. There were things that worried her, like snakes and bears with cubs, but she knew the animals well. For the most part, they feared people and usually wanted only to be left alone, so they generally didn't frighten her. But she didn't know what animals might be lurking in this dark and damp place, what poison things with fangs. She didn't know what conjured beasts might prowl the nether reaches of this sorceress's lair, beasts that feared nothing. She saw spiders, fat, dark, and hairy, their legs slowly raking the dank air, descending smoothly on threads anchored somewhere above. They vanished into the ferns growing in sprawling mats across the ground. As warm and humid as it was, Jensen kept her cloak closed around her and the hood covering her head to better protect herself from the likes of spiders. The bite of a spider could be as deadly as any animal. Dead was dead, no matter the cause. The keeper of the dead gave no special dispensation because the deadly poison came from something small and seemingly insignificant. The keeper of the dead embraced with eternal darkness those come into his domain for whatever reason. No grace was granted for how you came to be dead. As at home as Jensen felt in the out-of-doors, and as hauntingly beautiful as the swamp was, the place still kept her eyes wide and her pulse racing. Every vine or green wisp she touched seemed threatening, and more than once made her jump. The whole place felt as though death skulked nearby. And then, before her, the spine of rock, her only path down, ended in a still, flat, rank, moldering, mossy place crisscrossed with a tangle of roots. It looked like the trees feared the murky wet and tried to keep their roots up out of it. To the sides, the ground was grown over with every sort of spreading vegetation. She spotted the distinctive shape of a leg bone sticking up from the muddy expanse to the side. The bone was covered with fuzzy green mold, but the general shape remained recognizable.